Bicatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge, Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Bicatra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. Today, we're doing something pretty ambitious. We're looking at a real intellectual revolution, getting into the mind of René Descartes. And our guide for this is Tom Sorrell's fantastic book, simply titled Descartes. Now, if you just think of Descartes as, you know, the I think, therefore I am guy, well, Sorrell argues you're kind of missing the point. He paints him not just as a philosopher, but maybe the architect of modern knowledge.
That's absolutely right. He wasn't just tinkering. Sorrell shows he literally had to, well, demolish the old ways of thinking to build something entirely new.
So that's our mission today, right? To understand not just what he thought, but why it was so radical, and I guess why it still matters for science, for tech, for how we even define knowledge.
Exactly. It's about understanding that huge shift he engineered. He built this bridge, really, between the medieval scholasticism, you know, that old system based on Aristotle and church authority.
Right. Lots of tradition there.
Loads. And he bridged that to modern scientific thinking, this whole quest for certainty, the mind-body split, it's foundational for how we operate today, sometimes without even realizing it. It was really quite revolutionary stuff.
Okay, so before we dive into the deep end with Descartes himself, let's talk about our guide, Tom Sorrell. Who is he, and what makes his take on Descartes so, well, useful?
Well, Tom Sorrell is a really respected British philosopher. He's a professor at the University of Warwick, and his specialty is precisely this period, early modern philosophy. Thinkers like Descartes, Hobbes, that whole intellectual ferment.
Okay, so he knows the era.
He really does. But what's key, I think, is his dual expertise. He's not just a historian digging through old texts. He combines that deep historical scholarship, understanding the, you know, the chaos of the 17th century, with a sharp contemporary analysis.
Meaning he connects it to now.
Exactly. He doesn't treat Descartes like some dusty statue. He sees him almost like a, well, a project manager facing this huge crisis of knowledge and trying to engineer a solution. Sorrell really focuses on the big picture of Descartes' entire project.
That sounds refreshing. Not just the greatest hits, but the whole strategy.
Precisely. Sorrell puts him right in the thick of it, this intellectual battlefield where old certainties were crumbling. He shows Descartes wasn't just having abstract thoughts. He was responding to a very real problem. Nobody knew what sources of truth they could actually trust anymore.
So Sorrell paints him as having this grand plan then.
Absolutely. A systematic plan to dismantle all the confusion and build this unified system of knowledge, all grounded in ideally absolute certainty, like mathematical certainty.
Okay, so let's get into that central premise of Sorrell's book. What was the big idea driving Descartes? Well, Sorrell lays it out really clearly. Descartes basically saw the existing foundations of knowledge, that scholastic tradition, as, well, crumbling. Too much ambiguity, too much pointless debate based on authority rather than reason.
Right, it wasn't working anymore.
Exactly. So his project was to tear that down and replace it with a single unified system of science, built on clarity, on certainty. And Sorrell walks us through the structure of this quest, doesn't he? It starts with that sense of crisis.
Yes, the old ways failing. Then comes the method, this really intense process of radical doubt, doubting everything possible.
Which sounds negative, but it leads somewhere positive.
Paradoxically, yes. It leads to the one thing he can't doubt. The fact that he is doubting. The thinking itself. That's the cudito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. The existence of the thinking self.
And he calls that his Archimedean point. What's that?
Yeah, the Archimedean point. It's a great analogy. You know, Archimedes, the ancient Greek guy.
Who said, give me a lever long enough and a place to stand and I will move the world.
That's the one. For Descartes, the cudito is that unshakable place to stand. It's the first absolutely certain truth from which he believed he could rebuild all of human knowledge. Systematically.
Wow. But it wasn't just about abstract ideas, was it? Sorrell emphasizes a practical goal, too.
Definitely. The ultimate aim, as Sorrell points out, wasn't just intellectual satisfaction. It was to use this certain foundation. First, proving God exists as a guarantor of truth. We'll get to that.
Okay.
And then reconstructing knowledge in a way that would allow humanity, in his famous phrase, to become masters and possessors of nature. It's applied science, really, driven by this deep philosophical groundwork.
That link between the deep thought and the practical outcome is fascinating. Okay, so to achieve all this, he needed a new way of thinking, a method. Let's dig into that first part, the demolition phase.
Right, so you have to picture the 17th century. It's intellectually messy. Galileo's rocking the boat with his telescope. The old Aristotelian science just isn't holding up against new discoveries. There's a real sense of, well, foundational crisis.
So people needed a new framework.
Desperately. And Descartes looked at all this disagreement and thought, the problem isn't just the conclusions, it's the methods people are using. They aren't rigorous enough.
So he came up with his own.
Exactly. His famous four rules for clear thinking. These are still incredibly relevant. First, accept nothing is true unless it's perceived so clearly and distinctly that you can't doubt it.
Okay, high bar.
Very. Second, divide every problem you're examining into as many smaller parts as possible to make it manageable.
Break it down. Makes sense.
Third, conduct your thoughts in an orderly way. Start with the simplest things, the easiest to understand, and gradually move step by step to the more complex.
Logical progression.
And fourth, make your enumeration so complete and your reviews so general that you're sure you haven't missed anything. Be thorough.
So clarity, division, order, completeness sound like a good recipe for thinking.
It really is.
Yeah.
And the most dramatic way he applied this was in his search for that first certainty. That's the method of radical doubt.
Ah, yes, the doubt. How far did he actually take it? You said it was methodical.
Sorel really emphasizes this. It's methodological doubt, not actual despairing skepticism. Think of it like a controlled demolition to clear the ground. He uses three waves of doubt to make sure absolutely nothing uncertain is left standing.
Three waves. Okay, what's the first?
First is the doubt from the senses. Pretty straightforward. Our senses sometimes deceive us, right?
Yeah.
A stick looks bent in water, distant objects look small.
Sure, illusions, mirages.
Exactly. So if they fooled us once, we can't fully trust anything they tell us. So doubt all sensory information.
Okay, that gets into the physical world as we perceive it. But what about things like math? 2 + 2 = 4 seems certain, doesn't it?
That's where the next wave comes in. The dream argument. This one's a bit more unnerving. Descartes says, look, I have vivid dreams that feel completely real while I'm in them.
Yeah, we all do.
So how can I be absolutely certain right now that I'm not just in another incredibly realistic dream? There are no foolproof signs to distinguish waking life from dreaming.
Ooh, okay. That casts doubt on whether there's an external world at all, dream or not.
Precisely. But even in a dream, maybe 2 + 2 = 4. That seems like a logical truth it should hold. So he needs a final, ultimate doubt weapon.
Which is?
The evil demon hypothesis.
Yeah.
This is the most extreme step. He imagines, just for the sake of argument, that there's an all-powerful, malicious demon whose sole purpose is to deceive him about everything.
Everything.
Everything. Maybe this demon is making him believe that 2 + 2 = 4 when it really equals 5. Maybe it's tricking him about the fundamental laws of logic. It's maximum hyperbolic doubt.
Wow. Okay, so he's basically nuked all foundations of knowledge, senses, the external world, even logic and math. What's possibly left after that? That's the genius of it, isn't it? Pushing doubt to that absolute limit reveals the one thing that survives, the turning point, the cogito.
Exactly.
Because even if he's dreaming, even if an evil demon is deceiving him about absolutely everything else, he must exist in order to be deceived or to do the doubting. The very act of thinking, doubting, being aware, proves the existence of the I that is thinking.
I think, therefore I am. It's not really a logical argument like A, therefore B. It's more like an immediate intuition, something grasped directly and indubitably, immune to the demon's tricks.
And that establishes the thinking self, the mind, as the absolute foundation.
That's the bedrock, the turn to the subject that's so revolutionary. Knowledge starts with my consciousness, not with external authority.
Okay, but like you said, he's kind of stuck in his own head at this point, right? He knows he exists as a thinking thing, but what about the external world? How does he trust his ideas about that?
Right, he needs a bridge back out. And that's where, perhaps controversially for modern readers, God comes in. God plays a crucial epistemological role here.
Epistemological meaning? Related to knowledge.
Yes, related to how we know things, the theory of knowledge. Descartes needs God as the ultimate guarantor that his clear and distinct ideas aren't just illusions created by that evil demon. He needs assurance that the world perceived clearly really exists.
How does he argue for God's existence from within his own mind, though?
Sorel highlights two main arguments. The first is often called the trademark argument. It's quite clever, in a way.
Okay.
Descartes looks within his own mind, which he knows is finite and imperfect, right? He makes errors, he doubts. But within that imperfect mind, he finds this idea of a being that is infinite, perfect, all-powerful, all-knowing, God.
Uh-huh.
And he asks, where could I, a finite, imperfect thing, get such an idea of infinite perfection. It's like the idea is too big for my limited mind to have created on its own.
So it's like the idea itself proves something beyond him.
That's the argument. He suggests this idea must have been implanted in him by an actual infinite perfect being, like an artist's signature or a trademark on their creation. That creator is God.
Okay. And once he's established, God exists.
And since perfection includes benevolence, a perfect being wouldn't be a deceiver like the evil demon, Descartes argues he can now trust his clear and distinct perceptions. If God exists and isn't tricking him, then the things he perceives with absolute clarity and distinction, like mathematics and the existence of an external physical world, must be true.
It's quite a chain of reasoning. Doubt everything, discover self, find idea of God, prove God, trust clear ideas, rebuild knowledge.
That's the architecture. And this framework leads him straight into his most famous and perhaps most problematic metaphysical doctrine. Mind-body dualism.
Ah, yes, the big split. Tell us about that.
Well, having established the thinking self, res cogitans, the thinking substance, and the external world, he sees them as fundamentally different kinds of stuff. Reality, for Descartes, is split into two distinct substances.
Mind and matter.
Pretty much. You have res cogitans, the mind, consciousness, thought. Its essential nature is thinking, and it has no physical extent. It doesn't take up space.
Okay, pure thought.
And then you have res extensa, the physical stuff, matter. Its essential nature is extension having length, breadth, depth, being located in space. It's fundamentally geometrical, mathematical, and crucially, it doesn't think.
So the body, for Descartes, is just part of res extensa, a machine.
Exactly. A complex biological machine, but still fundamentally just extended matter, operating according to physical laws. While the mind, the soul, is pure, unextended thought.
But wait, if they're totally different substances, how do they interact? How does my non-physical mind decide to lift my physical arm? That seems like a huge problem.
It is the huge problem. The famous interaction problem. And Descartes knew it was a problem. He got absolutely hammered on this point, most famously by Princess Elizabeth of Bohemia.
Really? A punch?
The very sharp, philosophically astute princess. She corresponded with Descartes and basically asked him point blank.
Yeah.
How can an unextended thing push around an extended thing? It violates basic physics, even as understood then.
What did Descartes say?
He struggled, honestly. His most famous suggestion, which Sorel mentions, was that the interaction happens somehow in the pineal gland, a small gland in the center of the brain. But he never gave a fully convincing mechanical explanation. It remained a major weak point in his system.
Fascinating that the critique was so immediate and, well, persistent. And let's pull back a bit. Sorel identifies some key themes that run through this whole ambitious project. What are the big takeaways?
I think the first one Sorel really emphasizes is the primacy of method. For Descartes, how you arrive at knowledge is just as important, maybe more important, than inheriting beliefs. That systematic, rigorous inquiry, breaking things down, that's his lasting legacy for science and critical thinking. It's a toolkit.
Right. The process matters. What's another key theme? Well, definitely the foundational role of the self. That whole turn to the subject we talked about. Starting knowledge from the individual's own conscious awareness, the cogito. That's incredibly modern, isn't it? It lays the groundwork for ideas about personal autonomy, individual reason being the judge, and even scientific objectivity starting from the observer.
Absolutely. It puts the individual thinker right at the center. Then there's the unity of human knowledge. Descartes didn't see philosophy, physics, medicine, ethics as totally separate boxes.
Ah, like his tree analogy.
Exactly. The famous tree of knowledge. Metaphysics, like the cogito and God, are the roots, providing the foundation. Physics is the trunk, and the branches bearing fruit are the practical sciences, mechanics, medicine, morals. It's all one interconnected system aiming for human well-being.
A very holistic view, in a way. And the last theme, it has to be the mechanization of nature. Treating the physical world, including animals and the human body, as a complex machine governed by mathematical laws.
Yeah, res extensa.
Right. Now, this was incredibly powerful for enabling scientific investigation. You can analyze it, predict it, manipulate it. But it also kind of stripped purpose and maybe even consciousness out of the natural world, didn't it?
It did. It raises huge questions about where mind fits in, if the universe is just particles bumping into each other according to fixed laws. And that debate is still incredibly relevant today, especially when we talk about things like artificial intelligence. Can a machine really think? It's a very Cartesian question, in a sense.
It really is. Okay, Descartes wasn't just systematic. He was also quotable. Sorel highlights some lines that really capture his thinking. Yeah, let's touch on a few key ones. Obviously, number one is cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. We've seen it's not just a logical deduction, but that immediate intuition of self-existence that becomes his standard for truth. Mm. Anything else he accepts must be perceived just as clearly and distinctly.
Bedrock, yeah. What else?
Then there's that core principle of his method. Divide each difficulty into as many parts as are needed to resolve it. It's less a fancy quote, more like an instruction manual for problem solving.
The analytical approach.
Exactly. That power of breaking complex things down into manageable chunks. It's how engineers build bridges, how programmers write code. It's fundamental.
It's incredibly practical.
And finally, one that reveals the ultimate goal. The purpose of my new philosophy is to make us the masters and possessors of nature. This really shows the practical ambition behind all the abstract stuff. The doubt, the cogito, God. It was all in service of ultimately improving human life through understanding and controlling the natural world. Science for human benefit.
That practical edge is key to understanding him. I agree. And it leads nicely into how these ideas, which seem so, 17th century, actually have real-world applications today. Sorel's analysis helps bridge that gap.
Absolutely. Take first principles problem solving. This is pure Descartes, applied in places like engineering or, say, innovative business strategy. People like Elon Musk talk about this.
How does it work?
Instead of just improving existing designs or following industry norms, which are like Descartes' inherited doubtful opinions, you deliberately tear down all assumptions. You ask, what are the absolute fundamental physical laws or constraints governing this problem? And then you rebuild the solution from that basic, undeniable ground up. It's methodological doubt in action. Wow. Okay. So it's about questioning everything to get to the core truths.
Precisely. And you can apply a similar logic to critical thinking and navigating misinformation. We're bombarded with information today, right? Social media, news. It's overwhelming.
Definitely.
Using a sort of Cartesian skepticism helps. Don't just accept what you see or read. Question the source, like the evil demon, maybe. Check the evidence. Break down the arguments. Systematically doubt, in a way, to build a more reliable understanding for yourself.
Like building your own knowledge foundation piece by piece.
Exactly. And even more directly, his four rules, clarity, division, order, numeration. They're basically a blueprint for effective project management.
How so?
Think about tackling a complex project at work. Rule one, be absolutely clear on the objective clarity. Rule two, break the project into smaller, manageable tasks, division. Rule three, sequence the tasks logically, order. Rule four, ensure all necessary steps are included and reviewed, enumeration. It's a recipe for minimizing errors and working efficiently.
That's amazing. From 17th century philosophy to modern project planning. Okay, as we wrap up, what's your big takeaway from revisiting Descartes through Sorel's lens? What really stood out to you?
For me, honestly, it was the sheer audacity of the whole thing. We often just focus on the cogito, that one famous line, but Sorel really brings out the scale of the ambition to go from the deepest possible doubt, that evil demon scenario, all the way to constructing this complete unified system covering God, the mind, the entire physical universe, and our place in it. It's just staggering.
It really is a monumental intellectual journey.
And it makes you see the doubt differently. It wasn't the end point. It was just the absolutely necessary, maybe even terrifying, first tool he had to use to clear the site before he could start building. He really was an architect.
That's a great way to put it. My final thought, maybe for you listening, builds on that. Sorel really shows how powerful philosophical ideas can be as tools for thinking. Descartes had this incredible intellectual courage to systematically question everything, even his most basic beliefs.
And the lasting insight, I think, isn't necessarily about agreeing with his mind-body dualism or his proofs for God. It's about recognizing the power of that method, the rigorous systematic questioning. It shows that applying that kind of intellectual courage can lead to genuinely transformative insights, ideas that resonate centuries later. And maybe it challenges us today to be just as rigorous and courageous in examining our own deeply held assumptions.
A challenge to think more clearly and bravely, a perfect place to leave it. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Akatra Foundation.